Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Bex.
And I'm Laura.
And this is the worst girl gang ever.
We're thrilled to have a new sponsor, Bauer Swimwear.
Design-led and thoughtfully created for a slower pace of life, Bauer is an environmentally conscious swimwear brand that are championing change in the apparel industry. Combining high fashion with functionality, Bauer's luxury swim and resort wear is designed to look and feel exceptional.
The brand's beautifully constructed collections are inspired by art, iconic design and childhoods by the beach in Sydney. Each piece is made by small ateliers in Italy and Portugal using recycled and responsibly sourced fabrics.
Bauer is committed to creating a positive, diverse and fairly paid working environment. Plus, 1% of profits are donated to the Healthy Seas Initiative, helping to close the loop.
Read more about their sustainability commitments and shop the full Spring Summer 21 collection now at bowerswimwear.com.
Also, we can give a discount, 25% off with code TWGGE.
Hello and welcome to this very special episode. Yeah, you will be. Of the worst girl gang ever.
Whee!
Why is it very special, Bex?
I don't know. Because it's just us?
Yes, exactly that.
Yes.
Exactly that. It's just us.
Can you hear the rain pitter-pattering on my roof?
No.
Oh.
Is anyone else? Right into the studio on a postcard if you can.
Yeah. So how are we? What's new? We haven't recorded for ages.
No, goodness, we haven't. It's been a long time.
It's been so long that I've lost my headphones. So apologies if I sound far
a bit echoey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's been going on? We've had our first birthday anniversary, whatever it's called.
Yes, we have. And also, more importantly, most excitingly, we've launched our very first Pathway to Recovery miscarriage.
We have. We're 1 week in, aren't we?
We are 1 week in. And it was just so, it's been so lovely to read some of the reviews as well.
Yeah, they are blinding. We need to share them actually on the old gram so people can read them.
There's nothing like first-hand experience, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone's probably a bit fed up of us saying, this course is really amazing.
Yeah.
They're like, well, you would say that because you were, what,
designed?
I was going to say designed.
Curated.
Yeah, okay. No, we are curators.
Course curators.
So what happens if you, like, cure a sausage? Are you a curator? Like
no.
A pepperami.
What about if you cure world debt? Are you a curator then?
Or just the curer?
Just an absolute ledge. Anyway, I feel like we're veering swiftly on topic.
Yeah.
What are we here to talk about today, Laura?
Well, today we are going to talk about triggers and boundaries.
Triggers and boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Things covered, things, yeah, I mean, they're super. The whole topic is rife with triggers and issues, isn't it?
We talk a lot about, like, grief and the ugly feelings and all that stuff. Well, actually, we need to talk about the things that cause the grief and that cause the ugly feelings, right?
Yeah.
We need to talk about them and try and put some plans in place to protect ourselves from them.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think that you can protect yourself from triggers?
Yeah, I think you can. I think it takes a lot of, you know, without getting airy-fairy and spiritual on you, Bex, takes a lot of sort of like self-talk and, you know, inner work with your mind, because at the end of the day, it is your mind that causes these triggers to turn into the grief and the ugly feelings, right?
Yeah, I guess so. That is as definitely as airy fairy as I've ever heard you. You're spending too much time with Robo Mummy.
she's uber airy fairy, honestly.
Like, I'm looking forward to it. Well, last time you went for a drink without me, and next time I'll come too.
Yeah, definitely.
And we'll
talk about crystals and shit.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that stuff. Love it.
So anyway, let's get down to business.
To defeat the Huns.
So, triggers then. I was thinking about this earlier. I was thinking about stuff that used to trigger me. Honestly, I've told you a million times before, I was fucked up.
Psycho, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, like, just too many things to even mention. But, you know, firstly, testing, right? That is triggering.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah,
testing for a pregnancy, probably, what, 8-9 days after you've ovulated. And Aunt Flo rearing her ugly red head. They are some massive triggers.
Do you know what? This is funny. I did a lateral flow COVID test, and I found it quite strange to do, quite triggering. And it was positive because obviously I had COVID, which, you know, not a secret. And when the line came up, it was like, it was a very strange sort of feelings. You can't, it's something so inbuilt in your life so far, isn't it?
Yeah,
you can't get away from it. And then just watching this line appear, it's sort of this excitement and dread, and then of course I remembered that it meant I had COVID. So, but it is a very, I think it's such a deeply rooted psychological thing, triggers are, and I've never given them much thought before this arena of my life.
Yeah,
it's weird, isn't it?
It is weird. And not only is a negative pregnancy test triggering, you've also, when you go through like a missed miscarriage or any miscarriage, and you've got to test afterwards to check that your HCG has reached zero, that's also a massive trigger as well, isn't it?
I think that's a massive head fuck. I really do. And I don't know that I actually ever dealt with mine properly, because I did my test 3 weeks later, praying for a negative result. And actually it was positive. And I had to go back to hospital and stuff. And I know that's really, it's really common, isn't it? And that is, you spend so much time praying for a positive pregnancy test, and then you see one and you're disappointed.
Yeah.
Because you just want it all to be over.
I was like that with my molar. Obviously, for 6 months, my HCG, it took for it to come down to zero. And every week I would ring up Charing Cross Hospital, and they would tell me, and I would just be praying that it come down enough to not have to go and have bloody chemotherapy. A couple of times they were like, Laura, if it doesn't come down next week, then we're going to have to talk about chemotherapy. And yeah, all that time wanting
a
positive test, and this was just 6 months of agony waiting for it to drop down to, you know, below two or whatever it was.
And that in itself is madness, isn't it? That you have to think your way through that. You have to go through that in terms of something that you're so desperate for. It's just, everything is flipped on its head, and I just think it's a really difficult thing to go through.
Mindfuck, we call it.
Yeah, total mindfuck. Because also, until you get that positive, that negative test, and until you go through that, you can't really focus on the emotional aspect of healing, can you? Because your body still thinks it's pregnant.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could, but it's not easy to do that. You can't focus on moving on or trying again. which is normally what people, that would be your you know, overwhelming thoughts. Right, okay, when can we try again? And yeah, you can't all the time. You're going through that waiting for a negative test. But I mean, aside from tests and periods, there's all sorts of other triggers in this whole world of pregnancy loss, right? Every bloody period. It's like, oh, well,
I
was so sure it was going to happen this month and it didn't.
Yeah, I didn't have any of that because I didn't get periods.
Mm.
So for me, it was all about the negative test, because the only way I could ever tell is by doing a negative test. So I dread to think how many negative tests I've taken in my in my life. But I think some women find it triggering to have a period following miscarriage, don't they?
Yeah.
Because of the blood and because of the, obviously, that whole
trauma
side of things. So I can totally, I didn't personally find it, but I can totally understand why you would. Did you find
that? Well, I mean, twice I didn't have a period following the miscarriage because I had another pregnancy and another miscarriage.
Yeah.
Twice that happened. But I guess, no, I didn't, because I was able to sort of reframe it, I guess, in my head for now that's done, I can start trying again. It sort of saw it as a hopeful thing.
Line under it.
And like I've told you before, every time I get my period, I work out what my next due date is going to be.
Yeah, that's mad. I don't know how to
so
do
if
that.
I fall pregnant this month, my due date, I don't work out my due date because I would have to have the baby by C-section at 38 weeks. So I'll work out that date and it'll be a month after Bertie's third birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. As I see it, there's Facebook announcements.
Yeah.
Baby scan pictures.
Yeah.
Then there are seeing pregnant women out and about.
Yeah, rubbing their tummies, looking at all the cute stuff in mothercare. Oh, mothercare doesn't exist anymore, does it?
No. Well, that's at least one thing that we've dealt with already.
You're welcome, girls. We've sorted that for you.
Took them right out. So there's that. And then there's the awful, awful, your friend is pregnant and you are not.
Yeah. Your best friend, your sister.
Or your cousin or your,
colleague or whoever.
Yeah, or your colleague. I think, I remember recently we had someone comment on one of our posts saying that 9 of their colleagues were pregnant in their office.
It was a bit like that working as a nurse in the NHS.
Yeah.
People used to joke that there was a seat. Don't sit on that seat, we'll get pregnant. And I'd be like, fuck off.
Must be something in the water.
Yeah.
Give me that fucking water. that must be so hard because it's something that you're faced with every single day. Like, how do you deal with that? Tell me, Nora, how did you deal with that? Not very well.
Not very well. Ignored it. If someone that I worked with was pregnant, I just didn't talk to them. No, not really. You know, have you got the keys for the drug cupboard? It'd be that sort of chat.
What, so you could take some drugs?
Nothing more.
Yeah, that's really bad. So how would you advise someone to do it differently, or what would you do differently now if you were to go back?
I don't know how I would deal with that differently, but I would definitely try and deal with my shit differently in general and hope that would make it easier to live in those situations. I couldn't have dealt with it any differently.
At the time.
No, yeah, I know I couldn't. But then I was in a shitty mindset and just couldn't really cope with much in life. So I would probably just seek more help, more therapy, I would try something different. Yeah, in the hope that it would enable me to manage stuff a bit better.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because it's like saying, it's not about the sort of, the triggers are sort of a symptom. If you imagine it as an illness, the triggers are like a symptom of the illness. So you can't necessarily just get rid of the trigger, the symptoms. You have to go to the root of the problem.
X, that's the best analogy you've ever come up with.
Is it actually?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's true. That's how, I mean, it's not like an illness or a disease, like you say, but if it were, you're right.
I've got another one.
Oh, God.
So if you...
You could have finished that on a high. Now you're going to mess it up.
No, it's getting better. So if you're in your car and a warning light comes on, to say you've got no oil, you don't just smash the warning light, do you? And then go, oh, the light's, you know.
Or ignore the warning light.
Exactly. You have to go and put some oil in the car.
Yeah.
Because if you just take the light out, everything's still going wrong, but you don't know about it.
Yeah.
Ignoring it. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you said it was getting better.
Sorry. I think that's a good one, though, because I think I've never looked at that before, because I've always thought triggers, you can't get over them. How do you get over them? Because all people say to us, how do you deal with it all the time? And because I've not had a long time in that world, I haven't had to deal with stuff like you have, for example. I just think, I don't know what to say. But in terms of, I think you're absolutely right. I think if you can sort yourself out mentally and get into a better place or help yourself or become part of this community and stuff, then it actually builds your resilience, doesn't it?
Definitely.
And it enables you to deal with things in a more positive way.
Yeah, and that could look like you just taking that person aside or messaging them or contacting them in some way and saying, I'm so happy for you. As you know, everything that's been going on with me, I find it really difficult. So please excuse me if I'm not involved in the conversations about your baby. But, you know, when I'm ready to chat to you about it, I will. And I think people, very rarely, we do get messages from people who have like real shitty dilemmas with family and friends. Very rarely. But most of the time, people are really supportive. They just don't know how to be supportive. So if we can tell them, then
and also I think with infertility and miscarriage and baby loss and all of the stuff that we talk about, there is such a lack of control. But actually, by making these decisions and by sending a message, just like you said, you are taking back an element of control of the situation, aren't you?
Yeah. And then if they don't listen to you, then you have every right to call them every name under the bloody sun, bastards.
Okay.
And you won't feel bad about it because they've not done what you asked them to do.
Yeah, sure. But what we were saying fundamentally is that by gaining control of what you have, what you ask for, you then, I don't know, maybe feel like you're doing something to help yourself, and that must be quite a sort of empowered feeling.
I know it's really hard, and it's not as simple as we've just said, because there are lots of situations where you find yourself wanting to say those things and wanting to put those boundaries in place, but you don't want to because you don't want to make it an issue, because you're just resentful of the fact that you have this going on in your life. Yeah, it's really difficult. I've wanted to put boundaries in with people in the past, but just thought, why should I fucking have to? Why should I have to be going through this and then just end up getting into sort of like a pit of despair again?
Yeah.
But it is hard making that call and contacting people. But it's also hard being on the other side of it, being that friend who doesn't know what to do for the best. Because let's face it, like with pregnancy announcements, you're going to sort of hate them however they tell you.
Yeah.
It's really difficult.
And it's not, I think the most important thing to say is that it's not that you wish it wasn't there, it's that you wish it was you as well, isn't it?
Yeah. But just for all those people out there who do wish it wasn't them, I have felt that a few times. Yeah, honestly, like, to be completely honest with you. Yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, we always say, oh, I'm happy for them, just sad for me. I've had times when I've just not been happy for other people. I've just not been able to find it in me because I've just been in such a shit place. So I know that there will be other people listening to this who have also felt that.
And that's understandable, though, isn't it? Because it's such a complicated thing to go through, because it's not one size fits all. It's not you have a miscarriage and therefore your set of feelings will be this, this, and this.
Mm.
It's, you know, and I mean baby loss. I don't mean just a miscarriage. I mean, you can feel really angry but then a couple of days later feel no anger at all and complete despair.
Yeah.
And it's just so hard to predict your feelings when they're so different.
Yeah. And you can feel like you're on top of it. You could see, you know, someone you know is pregnant. You see it on Facebook. Okay, cool. Well, I don't really know them that well. I can just compartmentalize that, push it to the side. And then the next day you'll see another pregnancy announcement, or the next day your mate who was due at the same time as you just has their baby. And these triggers one on top of the other is what causes you to completely lose your shit and withdraw and just hibernate and hide in bed, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess the important thing to know is that it's not really shit all of the time. There will be days when good stuff happens in your life, unrelated to baby loss, but you'll be able to manage things and you'll feel better about yourself. But then you've got to be prepared and ready for when the crap happens, when people say things that they shouldn't, or when announcements pop up on social media, or when everyone's in that WhatsApp chat talking about what they're going to call the bloody baby. And
it comes from a wounded heart, right?
Oh yeah, I guess it does a bit.
Yeah.
Do you know the other trigger for me, which is worth mentioning, because I imagine other people might be as messed up to feel the same. I used to get really triggered by weddings. You know, when you're at that age when everybody goes, one year we had 10 weddings in a year. And everyone around you is getting married, which means that also everyone around you is having babies. And I just sort of equated one thing to the other.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember you saying that about weddings and being like, right, oh, they'll be next then. They'll have a baby before me.
Yeah. I would sit there throughout the ceremony, squeezing Scoop's hand, sometimes actually crying a bit, pretending that it was the, you know, emotion of, wow, they're so in love, but thinking they're going to have a fucking baby before me, even though I started trying 3 years ago and have been through however many losses and want it so much more. I mean, I don't know how much they wanted it, but this is what would be going through my head. And and everyone at the wedding, when they're at the age to get married, all their friends are at the age to get married and have children, and there'll be people with bumps and people who's, oh, this is my first night out after having their child, and oh man,
and you're just sat in the corner getting pissed,
fucking obliterated.
Yeah. I have no trouble imagining.
I am down on the floor with Auntie Pam doing Oops Upside Your Head at 8 p.m.
8 p.m. amazing. Like taking out the kids on the dance floor as well.
That's it.
I hate it's always because I'm a wedding photographer, I see this a lot.
Oh no, I'm that person.
Yeah. Who's like slightly out of control, but you don't want to say
might want to go easy, or how about you have a soft drink?
Yeah.
You can't say that to me, Bex.
No, my brother and sister-in-law had a long journey to their children, and I remember her saying that they got married the same year as William and Kate, you know, Prince and Princess. And then one thing she found really hard is watching them then have their children, because it's so public.
Yeah,
watching them have their children, that must be a really kind of interesting one as well, because, you know, Meghan Markle had the miscarriage, didn't she? And then she fell pregnant again, and now she's had the baby. And there must be so many people out there that feel so triggered by that, because you have camaraderie with Meghan. She's lost a baby. I've lost a baby. Oh, I feel her. I know her, blah, blah, blah. And then she's pregnant again. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, I have felt really sort of betrayed. I have felt really betrayed by people when they've gone through miscarriage or baby loss. I've poured my heart out to them, shown them support, told them, pointed them in the right direction, and done all the things that I should have done. And then they've gone and had a baby. I'm like, no way. That's not fair. That is not fair. And I remember one friend, I was out somewhere and I was giving her lots of support. Like 2 weeks later, she announced her 12-week pregnancy. And I was like, oh my God, I spent an hour of my night trying to support you. And you could have just said, actually, I'm 10 weeks pregnant, right?
Yeah, it's hard. And I did a really similar thing in that I was going, I found out something about acupuncture and it was something that someone I know, my issue was echoed in someone that I know. And I phoned her and I was like, oh my God, I've just seen my acupuncturist and he says this and he says that and that could be our problem. We could, you know, this is something that we could do together and blah, blah, blah. And she was like, oh yeah, great, blah, 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 blah. And then I, again, found out a couple of weeks later that she had been pregnant when we'd had that conversation. And you just feel like such a mug, don't you?
Like, such a mug. And you shouldn't, because they will have been thinking, oh my goodness, I feel so awful. And they would never in a million years think, ha ha, what a loser.
Unlucky.
That's what you feel like though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's happened with so many people. And of course you're not betrayed and it's their news to share. And yeah, it's just very triggering. It is.
And it's completely, the thing is that I think one of the really hard things about the community that we're in is that we know that we're being completely unreasonable. You know, it's unreasonable to be angry about seeing someone's scan picture on Facebook. You know that, and it almost makes it worse, doesn't it? Because you're like,
there's no reason why these people shouldn't share their pregnancy news. There's no reason why they shouldn't have a baby shower. It's just so hard to deal with.
Yeah, which brings us on nicely to the boundaries, right?
Yeah, we need to come up with a few ideas, I think, of how we can sort of protect our emotions without shutting ourselves off from the world.
And without really, like, upsetting people as well. Because let's face it, you don't want to upset anyone, do you?
No, you don't.
So boundaries are incredibly important. In fact, I'm a keen boundary person. I always have been. I've actually been a lot better at putting firm boundaries in and sticking to them since I lost the baby.
Yeah. Because
my perspective altered and my priorities changed. And actually I put up with a lot less shit now than I did do before.
Snap. I remember back to my younger days, pre-TTC, I organised every event that there ever was, every night out, every party, and I never missed anything, and I was the last one there. So when I met Scoop, and he's like as much of a party animal as me, if not more, we were always the last ones standing at parties, and we spent the first couple of years of our relationship just pissed at the weekends, out and partying, and never ever said no to anything. And then there was just this point, sort of after a few years, I realized, a few years of going through loss and stuff, I realized I need to say no. Otherwise I'm just going to go to this thing and I'm just going to get wasted because I don't know how else to deal with it. And it was much easier to just not go. But I went to the extreme and just shut myself off completely. Not for all of that time, but for about 6 months to a year, I just didn't really interact with anyone. But I got to a point where I was like, I need to put boundaries in place. I didn't think that, but I just did. Like, it's only recently, since we talk about it more and I've written about it and tried to understand it, that I realised that's what I was doing. But
What sort of things did you do? What boundaries did you do?
Well, no, what I did was go too far. I just didn't do anything.
Oh, I see. Do you think that you were, like, drinking was ever a problem for you? Getting pissed was a problem?
No. When I went out and I was in a situation that I found difficult, I just would get drunk and be like the loud party animal.
Would you? Do you never, like, got drunk and then cried in the corner?
Yeah. After a certain point, that happened quite a lot. Yeah. So it was easier to just not go.
Yeah.
Didn't want to have to, but I talk about my game face all the time. I didn't want to have to put it on because people think then that you're okay. And I just wanted to tell people that I'm not okay, but I didn't want to do it there and then.
Yeah, it's really hard, that one, isn't it? Because I wrote about that the other day on a post. I can't remember what it was, but it was like, oh, no one knows the heartache that lies beyond our smiles.
Mm.
And it's so true, isn't it, that you almost don't want to be the gregarious, like, hey, the fun has arrived.
Yeah.
Because you think that people will be like, oh, she's over it. Oh, she's good. Yeah, she's good. Oh, how's Bex? Yeah, she's absolutely fine. Life and soul, completely okay. And actually, you want the attention, like, you want the attention. You want people to be nice to you, and you want to say, I'm really hurting and struggling, and I'm not okay. And I think it's very few people that can see that, can see past the facades that we, you know, the masks that we wear. You have to know really well, don't you?
Yeah, totally. So I've always said that what I did is not an example of how to do it.
But it's probably how you've, like, learnt. You know, you sometimes in life you do the wrong thing to realise what the right thing is, don't you?
Yeah, true. So why don't we talk about some healthier ways to set boundaries?
Yeah.
Rather than what not to do.
Well, there's the obvious, isn't there? There's the unfollowing of accounts.
Yeah, and that's interesting. Did you see someone put in our pathway to recovery group the other day that someone advised them to set up a separate account? Because it's lovely being able to follow all of these people, but it can be triggering.
Yeah.
So setting up another account, particularly for loss or trying to conceive or whatever, means that you can dip in and out of that stuff as and when you need it, rather than it being, you know, you're looking at interiors and baking and then, oh, someone else is pregnant.
Yeah.
So that's an idea. But then, and that's easier. That's an easy thing to do because it's not anyone that you owe anything to. And you haven't got to explain yourself. But things like WhatsApp groups or, you know, with friends or family can be a little bit more difficult to sort of step away from.
Yeah. But we think, like, telling people that you're doing it and why you're doing it is a good way to put up a boundary. Say, for example, you've got so-and-so's baby shower and you're all in the group and it's really shit. And then you can just send a message privately and say, look, just to let you know, I'm really struggling at the moment, so I am going to leave the group. Blood, red, blood.
Yeah.
So if you're explaining yourself.
So I, after my second miscarriage, so I had numbers 1 and 2 straight after each other. And then about 2 weeks after the second one, I hosted a baby shower for one of my friends.
That's nuts, isn't it?
I know, right? So nuts. And we started planning it before I was even pregnant. But my other friend who was organising it with me said, Laura, come on, you don't have to do this. And my mate, whose baby shower it was like, why are you even, what are you doing? Are you okay? But yeah, just sort of threw myself into it. That was miscarriages 1 and 2. So I still had the energy to put like a game face on, you know?
Yeah.
But as the years went on and time went on, I just would message people, depending on who they were and how bad I felt at the time, I would either say, like you said, I'm sorry, I can't come, I'm struggling, or just, I'm sorry, I can't make it. How about we go out for tea and cake on this date? So not actually have to explain myself, because I don't want the energy of someone feeling sorry for me or for, you know, to make it a big deal. Just easier to just say, I can't make it. And they're not going to turn around and say, well, why not?
Yeah. But and I think also we as humans overthink things a lot, right? So in the baby shower example, like, I'm sat here, say for example, someone has a friend of mine has a baby shower. I'm sat here thinking, fuck, I need to go to this baby shower because I'm her friend and she's gonna da, 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 and what if I, and if I say this and not go, and if I go and then I cry, it will be horrendous, and if I, but then she's we've been friends since we were at school. She's probably thinking, oh, yeah, if she comes, that'd be cool. If not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, she's probably thinking, oh, do you know, I don't want to have to put that pressure on her to come. But if I leave her out, then that's going to be even worse.
Yeah. Or she's thinking, I would rather she didn't come because...
Oh, I don't feel like I'd be able to celebrate properly.
Yeah. Can you hear the rain now? I mean, it is horrendous.
I can't hear rain. And so going back to things like pregnancy announcements, I think we've talked about this before, but we should probably just cover it. It's important to tell people what you need from them, what you expect from them. If it's someone who's close to you, then and they know what you've been through, it shouldn't be any real surprise that this is something that you might struggle with. So we've talked about it several times, but we have come to the conclusion that a text message is probably the easiest way. But I mean, whatever is the easiest way for you to receive this news, tell them. For yeah. us, we think it's a text message, because that way you they can tell you before they announce it on Facebook or wherever, and you get the news and it gives you time to process it. You can cry, you can swear, you can hate them for a minute or feel jealous, whatever it may be. Send them a token, you know, congratulations, I'm really happy for you message. And then in a day or two, once you've come round to the idea of it, maybe then message them more and have a bit more of a conversation about it, if that's something that you can deal with. But if someone doesn't know that that's how you want to hear, then they could really fuck up and tell you at your mate's wedding or while you're sat next to them at work.
It's yeah, definitely. And it's hard, isn't it? Because I think from their perspective, like when I think back to things that I've done, I phoned a friend of mine who was really struggling to have children. I phoned her to tell her that I was pregnant, because from my perspective, I wanted her to hear it from me.
I don't think a phone call's too bad.
Don't you?
No, I don't. There was one person that I phoned when I was pregnant with Bertie, and it was someone who's I'm very close to, and I wanted them to hear it from me. And they'd never said to me that they would prefer to hear it via a text message. And it was something that we'd spoken about quite a lot, both of our struggles to have a baby. And they'd never said a text message, and I felt like I sort of owed it to her.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to do it face-to-face because I know how triggering that can be. So I thought a phone call, it's not quite as difficult to do. It's not quite a text message, but it's a little bit more personal. So, yeah, I don't think it's a phone call is a definite no-no.
Yeah, I suppose in a way, like, at least with a phone call, you can assess that, like, and be like, oh, are you out and about or have you got 5 minutes to talk? Whereas you can't really control where a text message is read, can you?
True, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what other people think.
Yeah.
How like it's never going to be a nice thing to hear, but how would you like to be told?
Yeah. And this is all part of creating the boundary, isn't it? So that people so that when you get the news, it's easier to manage.
And it's kind of on more on your terms, and it's this idea of control.
Exactly.
Let's face it, we have control over so little in our lives. And this is so out of our control. But I think that even if it is just a kind of mirage of control, can't think of the right words, like a...
Yeah, I think it is, because it allows you preparation, right? So that to be able to cope with these feelings and these situations better, you have to know what's coming.
Yeah. Everyone wants to be supportive. Like, generally speaking, people like to help, to offer help, don't they? Like,
no one wants to upset you or piss you off, do they?
No, and people like to feel useful. People, you know, people love rallying around and helping people. And I think with the subject as a whole, people generally really want to be able to say the right thing, really want to offer comfort. So if you like that, surely there's nothing better than you tell it saying your nearest and dearest, I really appreciate everything you're doing for me. This is what I need from you.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say that, Bex, because we have done an episode, all for family and friends.
Yeah, we have.
About how they can support us through this. So for more details about that, then go and listen to that episode. Yeah, it's on there. It's a bonus episode for family and friends. Yeah, I guess the only other thing to mention is those awkward questions from people. And we can think about our answers to those in advance. So the Auntie Pat asking when you're going to crack on and have children, or
yeah,
when you're going to try again, or don't you think so-and-so needs a sibling? All of those sorts of questions. You'll all no doubt have been asked these sorts of things lots of times, but just come up with an answer, a response that
conditions response.
Yeah, basically shuts them up, but without being an arsehole.
You can be an arsehole if you want.
Yeah, or just say, I'd rather not speak about that, Auntie Pat. We're trying, you know, we're keeping that private. Or something that we've been struggling with, I'd rather not talk about it.
Yeah, it's difficult as well, isn't it? Because the privacy of our fertility is a choice, should be a choice, not an instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard when people ask about it.
I think the trouble is with being, if you're one of these people that's open about your fertility struggles, then you will find that people do ask you about it.
Yeah.
If they ask you about it, it's most likely them being ballsy and saying, I know that she's going through shit and I want to support her. So I'm not going to ignore it, because we've been told that the worst thing to do is not say anything. So I want to talk about it with her. So it can be really difficult to approach someone and discuss things that you're not comfortable discussing, i.e. oh, how are things going with you? I get it all the time. Are you still trying? And all of that sort of stuff. And it's really kind of people to not ignore what I'm going through. But equally, a lot of the time I'm like, oh no, we're on a break, even if we're not.
Yeah.
It's easier to say that. Yeah. So just prepare those answers and it makes those triggers a lot less triggering.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you've got a condition, even if it just feels like lip service, it doesn't really matter, does it? It just gets you through.
Yeah.
And if it makes you feel good, because I know that lots of people feel very strongly that their fertility is none of anyone else's business, right? Mm-hmm. So if it makes you feel like empowered to be able to say, like, nicely and politely, I don't feel comfortable discussing this. You know, I'm not in a position to talk about this with anyone. I find it is a private matter.
Yeah,
then great. You don't have to be rude about it, do you?
No.
You can.
Or you can be a little bit honest and just say, oh, actually, we're really struggling. It's been a few years now. So, yeah. And then they'll probably get all like hashtag orcs with you and then won't want to discuss it any further. Or they'll say, oh, well, my cousin's best friend,
yeah,
she tried acupuncture.
Or some right. Other.
No, I'm only joking.
Yeah. If you go to the third stone along the A272 at 5:45 PM and lick it,
yes,
you'll probably get pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just relax.
Just relax.
It'll happen.
It'll happen.
Yeah. Anyway, that's for a different podcast.
I can't believe you let that go without mentioning your book.
Oh, what, my book?
Yeah.
Why would I have mentioned that?
Well, I don't know. I heard that you wrote a book.
Oh, yeah. It's called It Will Happen.
Available in all good bookstores.
Yes. Go on Amazon, write a review.
Did you post that it had been out of stock?
Yeah.
No.
I know. I've got to stop buying my own book.
Yeah. All right, well, should we go then?
Let's.
All right, mate, I will see you soon.
All right, ta-ra for now.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the podcast.
Don't forget to subscribe, rate and review, and we'll see you next week.
And to find out more about our pathway to recovery, please visit our website.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.